This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Tehran says the Iraqi government is responsible to prevent threats against Iran from the Kurdistan region in view of the two countries' excellent relations. Russia bars entry to 100 Canadians in retaliation for Ottawa's recent sanctions on Moscow over the war in Ukraine. Also ahead, Chinese President Xi Jinping warns his U.S. counterpart Joe Biden not to cross Beijing's red line over Taiwan. Thank you for joining us. Our top story, Iran says Iraq's federal government has a responsibility to prevent any threats coming from the Arab country's northern Kurdistan region. The Iranian foreign minister says Tehran and Baghdad enjoy excellent relations, and so Tehran doesn't expect to be threatened from the Iraqi Kurdistan region. Hossein Amir Abdullahian added that the security of the two neighbors can be guaranteed if they abide by the outcome of bilateral talks. He made the remarks in a phone call with the Iraqi foreign minister. For his part, Fuad Hussein gave assurances that Baghdad wouldn't allow any threats to emerge to its neighbors from its soil. Earlier, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps carried out fresh drone and missile strikes against terrorist bases in Iraq's Kurdistan. The force says the strikes are a response to the terrorists' operations against Iran. Earlier, political commentator Sir Mehdi Torabi joined us with his take on the IRGC's operation in northern Iraq.
As you said, it's not the first time, and it probably won't be the last time that it happened. The problem is that we have within the Kurdish areas in northern Iraq, a particular group, a family, which from previous years, from decades before, has very close relations with the Mossad, with the Israelis, and with the Americans. So the point is that that region is not uniformly supporting this problem. There are other groups and other parties and other movements within that area which are opposed to the presence of the terrorists. But there's one particular group and one particular family who from long time ago has been a group that has allowed the presence of the Americans, the Israelis, the British before to be in that region. And from that region, this is something that goes back to the British division of the area. They created an area in the middle between Iran, Turkey, Iraq, Syria, from where they can always destabilize these countries.
EU foreign affairs ministers agree new sanctions against Iranian individuals and entities during a meeting in Brussels on Monday. Jerome Hughes reports from the Belgian capital.
Iran insists that recent riots in the country were orchestrated by outside adversaries such as the United States. But EU foreign ministers meeting in Brussels on Monday took a different view. They have agreed on new sanctions against Iran, claiming the rioters are seeking freedom.
To support them, today the Council adopted another 31 listing under the Iran human rights regime.
The channel you are watching now, Press TV, has also been added to the EU sanctions list. Press TV management has vehemently rejected claims by the EU that the channel broadcast forced confessions from detainees during recent riots in Iran. EU officials have been asked to provide evidence to back up the claims, but it's already clear that will not be forthcoming, simply because It never happened. This latest set of sanctions follows similar measures against Iran taken by the EU in October.
Iran is geographically a very strong position because they can decide, OK, if the European Union is going to make life harder in terms of sanctions, we can close or threaten to close the Strait of Hormuz. That means that Qatar, which is the principal supplier, I think about 70% of gas is coming from Qatar these days, will be stranded.
One EU minister says the new sanctions should not be allowed to derail talks around the JCPOA Iran nuclear deal.
I hope that this can be kept separated because the JCPOA negotiations, of course, it has a long history already, and I would say it's this close that we could get an agreement on JCPOA.
During a debate on human rights in the European Parliament a few days ago, the EU was accused of displaying double standards.
Europe has invaded and butchered millions, plundered and committed genocide, overthrown and murdered revolutionaries, backed brutal dictators, imposed murderous sanctions.
Amid growing economic turmoil in the EU, many experts claim sanctions against Russia have backfired. In other words, sanctions don't work. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The 9th Joint Economic Commission of Iran and Venezuela has kicked off in Tehran during the 3-day event. Officials from both countries discuss ways to enhance economic cooperation in different sectors. Gisu Misha Ahmadi has more from the Iranian capital.
A high-ranking Venezuelan delegation is in Tehran to take part in a joint economic meeting with the Islamic Republic. The purpose of the commission is to deepen cooperation in strategic areas as part of a 20-year agreement signed between the two countries.
This is the 9th Joint Economic Commission, and as you know, representatives from both sides have identified potential areas of cooperation in different fields, including transportation, industries, agriculture, energy, science, and technology. We will be trying to find ways to facilitate trade between the two countries to boost bilateral relations in order to avert the consequences of U.S. sanctions.
The Islamic Republic of Iran and Venezuela are two independent states that share common views about many regional and international issues, such as seeking independence, the right to self-determination, and a multipolar world order.
Nosotros lo que estamos mostrando es...
We care about the well-being of our nations. Our values are different from imperialistic countries. Now that our people and our governments are united, we can avert the U.S. sanctions and allow out countries to prosper through bilateral cooperation and a strong political and economic ties.
Part of our scientific cooperation and training includes ways to advance new trends in molecular biology, biotechnology, and proteomics for cancer treatment.
In Venezuela, we have been testing regenerative agriculture in order to avoid desertification. We have achieved excellent results, and now we are ready to share our experiences with Iran.
Iran and Venezuela signed a 20-year cooperation roadmap during a state visit by President Nicolas Maduro to Tehran in June 2022, as the two oil-rich countries sanctioned by the U.S. pledged to boost bilateral ties. The 9th Joint Economic Commission of Iran and Venezuela will be going on for another 3 days. It is expected to pave the way for implementing the cooperation agreements signed between the two countries in different fields. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
Turning elsewhere now, Russia adds 100 more Canadians to its sanctions list in the latest chapter of such a tit-for-tat measures between the two countries. Following Canada's sanctions in October, the Russian Foreign Ministry announced the banning of 100 people that it deems are directly involved in the formation of an aggressive anti-Russian policy. They include Canadian officials, business leaders, and media personalities. Canada has so far sanctioned over 1,400 Russian individuals and entities since the start of the Ukraine war in February. The EU's top diplomat hails the bloc's military assistance to Ukraine in its war with Russia while claiming that Moscow has failed in its military efforts. After a meeting of EU foreign ministers, Josep Borrell said the bloc would continue to isolate Russia globally by imposing sanctions in order to cripple the Russian economy. He also claimed that Russian President Vladimir Putin is unable to defeat the Ukrainian army and is withdrawing his troops to compensate for what Borrell called military failures. The EU foreign policy chief also accused Putin of deliberately increasing human suffering in Ukraine. Borrell further gave some figures of the European Union's aid to Ukraine since the start of the war.
And I think I can say that at least 8 billions of military equipment have already been provided to Ukraine by the European Union and the member states. It's about 45% of the effort done by the US. So it's not negligible. We are talking about not 3.1, but about 8 billion on military support.
Canada has also announced that it's doubling its military aid to Ukraine to $1 billion Canadian dollars. The funds will go to military surveillance, communications equipment, fuel and medical supplies. This as Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau sanctioned Russian justice and security officials. The bans target Russian police officers, investigators and other officials who Canada accuses of human rights violations against opposition leaders. Spanish truck drivers have begun a new strike, with hundreds of them marching through the capital, Madrid, against changes to freight rules and the cost of living crisis. Protesters carried the banners and chanted slogans such as "We don't want subsidies, we want solutions." Several other cities also witnessed similar demonstrations, but in some locations, marches were called off. The truckers brought Spain to a halt earlier this year when they staged a month-long strike. It caused food shortages and a bout of inflation that hit quarterly economic growth. The truckers eventually obtained a 1 billion euro package that included rebates on the price of diesel fuel. But they say the rebates have been overtaken by the rise in fuel prices ever since. Organizers of the new strike say they want to protect profit margins and keep truckers' costs down. Moving on, the Chinese president has warned his U.S. counterpart not to cross Beijing's red line over Taiwan. Xi Jinping issued the warning during a landmark three-hour meeting with Joe Biden ahead of the G20 summit in Indonesia's Bali. According to Chinese state media, Xi stressed that Taiwan is, quote, the bedrock of the political foundation of bilateral relations. He said, however, that he is looking forward to working with Biden to put Beijing-Washington ties back on the right track. Biden, for his part, said the U.S. wants to manage differences with China to prevent competition from becoming conflict. Both leaders reiterated the necessity of handling their relations in a peaceful and proper manner. Tensions between Washington and Beijing have been simmering in recent months, especially over what China calls the U.S. interference in the affairs of Taiwan, a self-ruled island Beijing claims as its own. Professor of International Relations from Oslo, Glenn Dyson, says the U.S. has a dual personality toward China, as it says something and does something else.
United States has a tendency to say one thing and do something very different. So, for example, the main security threat for China is the effort of promoting secessionists within Taiwan to break free from China. Now, the U.S. always states it's fully committed to the One China policy, which for the past 40 years, the U.S. accepted that Taiwan is a part of China and they should only have cultural and economic connections to Taiwan. They claim that they abide by this, but at the same time, they tend to gradually undermine the One China policy. The U.S. also says they want stable, predictable economic relations with China, but at the same time, they're going into a full economic war, blocking the export of high-tech products, and very openly saying that they want to slow down or even weaken the Chinese economy. So, and at the same time, they have their officials traveling around the region trying to recruit other countries in East Asia into what's effectively an anti-Chinese bloc. So the United States, they seem to mobilize against China, while at the same time, they are saying that they want more stable and peaceful relations.
Bahrainis have voted in parliamentary elections, and this may sound like a very positive development, but nothing could be further from the truth. For how could there be a free and fair election when all the opposition groups have been disbanded or crushed? Since 2011, the Bahraini uprising began and has not stopped until this day.
Bahrain has held its general elections. The regime was delighted. Authorities in the Sunni-ruled state, which crushed a 2011 anti-government uprising, said that the vote was free and put the turnout at 73%. But the vote was anything but free and fair. Rights groups called the voting environment of what is supposed to be a democratic process as political repression. They said there were highly restrictive measures that barred members of banned opposition groups. They added holding this general election will not address the atmosphere of repression and the denial of human rights that has gripped Bahrain for years. This in essence would make the vote a sham, that it would be void of holding any value. It was no surprise that Bahrainis took to the streets to protest the electoral process and announced that they would boycott the election, since it served the political trajectory of the ruling class. Bahrain experienced an uprising in 2011, still ongoing till this day, in which the Bahraini regime dissolved the main opposition groups and cracked down on dissent. The regime's crackdown over the past 12 years has been brutal. According to a 61-page report, the court is satisfied with the confession. Bahrain death sentences follow torture, sham trials. The regime has arbitrarily arrested more than 20,000 and tortured more than 6,000 victims. This also includes extrajudicial killings of more than 200 and political death sentences, the dissolution of opposition political societies, and the demolition of 38 mosques. And this is happening in a Persian Gulf country that is a key ally of the U.S. in the region, home to the U.S.'s Navy's 5th Fleet, and also the United Kingdom, which opened a permanent military base in 2018.
Well, that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. Economists are saying recession in the Eurozone is almost inevitable. According to surveys, The countries of the Eurozone will face an economic recession in the next year with a probability of about 80% due to a sharp increase in energy prices and a sharp decrease in the supply of electricity and gas. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Euronews has covered this story. According to the European Commission's autumn economic forecast, the Eurozone and most European Union countries will head to an economic recession in the last quarter of 2022. The European Union Economy Commissioner, Paolo Gentiloni, at a press conference said, "The economic situation has deteriorated markedly and we are heading into two quarters of contraction." The EU's executive revised up its inflation forecast from July, predicting that prices would peak at year-end and remain high in 2023. Brussels said inflation will average 9.3% in the European Union and 8.5% in the Eurozone for 2022. The European Commission said in a statement, "The European Union is among the most exposed advanced economies to high prices due to its geographical proximity to the war and heavy reliance on gas imports from Russia." The statement added, "The energy crisis is eroding households' purchasing power and weighing on production." While prices are expected to come down in 2023, inflation is still predicted to be at 7% in the European Union and 6.1% in the Eurozone, before decreasing to 3% in the European Union and 2.6% in the Eurozone in 2024. The EU forecast was based on the assumption that geopolitical tensions such as the war in Ukraine would neither normalize nor escalate, and that sanctions against Russia would remain in place. But the EU Economy Commissioner, Paolo Gentiloni, said the impact of adopted or planned fiscal energy measures adds uncertainty to the forecast for energy inflation. Average inflation for 2022 was highest in the Baltic countries, where it was forecast to be 19.3% in Estonia, 18.9% in Lithuania, and 16.9% in Latvia this year. EU labour markets are expected to react to the slowing economy but remain resilient, with unemployment growth expected to be at 1.8% before coming to a standstill in 2023. Unemployment rates in the European Union were projected to be at 6.2% in 2022, 6.5% in 2023, and 6.4% in 2024. The European Central Bank, the ECB, has meanwhile raised interest rates three times this year to tackle the rising prices. The ECB could continue to raise interest rates, which impacts commercial banks, meaning that mortgages and credit cards would become more expensive. The Central Bank's Governing Council said at the end of last month that inflation remained far too high and will stay above the target for an extended period of time. According to Eurostat's flash estimate, at the end of the month, inflation in the Eurozone reached a record high of 10.7% in October. The increase was fueled by energy prices, which Eurostat estimated were 41.9% higher than in the same month last year. Prices for food and tobacco were up by 13.1% compared to the same time last year. There have been multiple strike movements in European Union countries demanding higher wages because of record inflation. China's Xinhua news agency has also covered the same story. The European economy is slowing down and a contraction is predicted at least for the winter months due to the energy crisis and high inflation. Pascal Donohue, president of the Eurogroup, said everyone knows that the economy within the euro area is slowing down. In October, economic growth for the euro area stood at 0.5%, adding, "If we look at high-frequency indicators and the economic sentiment, we see that many things point to a contraction in economic activity this winter." The finance ministers representing the 19-country euro area met in Brussels, Belgium recently to discuss the eurozone's economic development, as well as budgetary measures to mitigate the impact of high energy prices. According to estimates by the European Commission, euro area governments have so far collectively spent about 200 billion euros, or 1.25% of the European Union's gross domestic product GDP, on energy support for the year. Pascal Donohue said around 70% of the supporting measures adopted by the member states so far are untargeted, meaning they benefit all or a very large share of the population. He added, "We are aware, of course, that targeting is not always easy, politically and technically, especially if you have to react very quickly. This is also why we have the expectation that this targeting of measures can improve in the coming months." Pascal Donohue added, "The ministers noticed the challenges of significant support and effectively managing the trade-off between reducing inflation while supporting both vulnerable households and the euro area's international competitiveness." The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. According to a survey, one in four Europeans described their financial position as precarious. More than half see a serious risk it will become so over the coming months, and 80% have already been forced into hard spending choices. As the cost of living crisis driven by high energy prices, rampant inflation, and the Russia-Ukraine conflict tightens its grip, the six-country survey for the French anti-poverty NGO Secours Populaire painted an alarming picture of a continent on the brink. More than half, or 54%, of more than 6,000 people across France, Germany, Greece, Italy, Poland, and the United Kingdom told the pollster Ipsos their purchasing power had fallen over the past 3 years, mostly because of higher food prices, higher fuel prices, heating and rent bills. The hardest hit country was Greece, where 68% of respondents said their spending power had fallen a lot or somewhat since 2019. This was followed by France in second position with 63%, Italy in third position with 57%, Germany in fourth position with 54%, and Britain in fifth position with 48%. Poland was in sixth position with 38%. About 80% of respondents said they had already been forced to make significant compromises, including cutting down on travel, 62%, cutting down on heating, 47%, borrowing from friends and family, 42%, finding a second job, 40%, and skipping their meals, 29%. Across the six countries, 64% said they were now often or sometimes unable to decide what to cut next, as they had already cut what they could have cut. 28% said they were overdrawn by mid-month, and 27% often or sometimes feared losing their home. On average, about 27% of respondents across the six countries said their financial and material situation was precarious, defined as one unexpected expenditure could change everything.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. This is Viewpoints, an analysis on the thoughts and speeches of the leader of Islamic Ummah, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Rouhani and Sayyid Naghvi. Sayyid Naghvi, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Shaykh Rouhani, assalamu
alaikum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
So on different occasions and in different speeches, the leader of Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has addressed the people talking about resistance against the arrogance or istikbar and the arrogant powers. So it seems that this concept, I mean resistance and muqawama, is an Islamic concept which is very much rooted in the religion of Islam, but unfortunately is not practiced by so many Muslim lands today. What is the reason, Shaykh?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Of course, as you rightly mentioned, resistance against arrogance, against oppression, is the thing that should be practiced by the true believers, because not only Islam, but also the previous religions, all the prophets, they resisted against arrogance, mm-hmm. against oppression. Look at, for example, the Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salatu wassalam. Yes. So he resisted against Nimrud.
Yes.
And Prophet Nuh, Musa alayhi salatu wassalam. So, of course, he also resisted against Pharaoh.
Yes.
So, and also the other prophets.
Also
so,
Prophet Jesus Christ.
Exactly, yeah.
Acted against injustice.
Yes. Yeah, because of this, he was crucified.
Yes, yes.
And so this is the same thing that was practiced by the Prophet, the last Prophet, the seal of the Prophet, Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And, of course, now the followers of the Prophet has this, all of them have this responsibility to resist against any kind of arrogance and oppression. Mm-hmm. And their lives and their times, as Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam resisted against yes. Yazid as a tyrant, yes. as a, let's say, oppressor, king of that time. So, of course, as it is mentioned by the supreme leader, that resistance is a must that should be mm-hmm. performed, that should be yes. practiced by the true Muslims.
And what are the criteria in order to understand what is arrogance and oppression? I mean, for example, injustice could be one of the standards. What about the other ways?
Yeah, the problem is that unfortunately nowadays the superpowers in our world, they actually level a kind of discrimination mm-hmm. against certain nations in the world. Because of this, to fight against this discrimination in the whole world, then of course the nations, the different countries, they do not have any other choice.
Yes.
They have to resist. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they will be eliminated from
yes.
the world.
Yes.
This is the reality of our world. Look, for example, these colonialistic powers in the history.
Yes.
Sometimes they eliminated the whole, let's say, residents and yes. inhabitants of different lands.
Especially the natives of those
exactly,
lands.
Exactly, in
right.
Australia and Canada yes, yes. and Africa and many other
yes.
areas. So this is the thing that they want.
Mm-hmm.
So if a nation do not resist or does not resist, then what is the other choice? What is
That's
the other
right.
option? There's no any other option. But of course, if there is justice, mm-hmm. if these superpowers accept that they distribute, for example, the properties of the nations of the world justly among all the nations, so of course, in that case, there will be no fighting, no battle, no problem.
Yes.
But the problem is that the arrogant power do not do this.
Mm-hmm.
They want all the properties, all the sources, the resources of the earth for themselves.
That's right.
So then the other nations, the poor nations, what should they do?
Okay, that's all right.
This is the point, yeah.
Thank you very much. And according to the leader's speech, the epitome of the istikbar today is the USA, Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi, and of course the other countries around and its allies. But it's mostly, usually we can say, that's all right. The epitome is called the U.S. Why the U.S.? Because the U.S. is not a big civilization. Maybe less than 500 years it aged as a new country. But nowadays, why? After five centuries, it could be the epitome of arrogance in the world.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, when we look at the history, we see that it is the U.S. after the Soviet Union who came into the power and who declared itself as a superpower.
Yes.
On top of that, there is a concept which is known as capitalization or capitalism.
Yes.
The concept of capitalism is a concept in which if you look at different fields, you will find why the Supreme Leader has said so about the USA. Number one, when you look at the person who commits crime in any other country, according to capitalism, he should not be put into jail or accountable for what he has done, or he cannot face the judiciary of that country, and he has to go back to U.S.
Yes, okay.
Because he has a high status.
Yes.
He's from a superpower country, and his rights will be, you know, taken care in the, in the U.S. So where does this rule has come from? If someone is killing, for example, we have seen in Pakistan, in Iran, in other countries, U.S. citizens used to kill people, and no one was saying nothing to them.
One of the constant complaints of the late Imam Khomeini against the U.S. citizens and officials in Iran was that the U.S. and the American dogs, you know, lives were more important than the lives of the Iranian people. Yes, yes. And he was against this and he declared it, you know, directly to the Shah of Iran on that time.
So we have seen this many examples like in the history. What happened to Vietnam?
Yes.
Why the atomic bomb was dropped in Hiroshima.
Yes.
So all these things shows that this is a satanic power. And that's why he called them Satan or the big Satan.
Yes.
So this was the reason. The reason is when you look at a person or a country or a government or a system, you need to define that thing. And when we look at the, like when you look deepest, like about the characteristics which they had, all the characteristics which we can say a satanic power can have, these are found in the U.S. at this time. So the U.S. officials, and we are talking about the U.S. System or the government right now, not the people. So people can be innocent, they don't know about things, but the officials, the government, obviously, they are committing these sins and these things.
The people are also, we can say, grown up under such thinking system.
Yes, obviously.
Isn't it?
Yes.
In the schools, in the... of course, Satan is everywhere, I do want to say, but somehow the people are also grown up by this system, which is somehow invisible. I mean, the hidden hands behind the scene are controlling.
No, there might be some people who are against these things. When you tell them about the facts, they say we didn't know about the facts.
Yes.
So the other point is, like, generally people, they are unaware of the facts.
Yes.
They know the things which are shown in the media, in the newspaper. And you know that the news is showing the fake news.
Yes.
They're showing the things which the governments, you know, they allow them, or maybe, you know, their agencies, they allow them. Otherwise, they cannot do that.
Okay.
For example, in the U.S., in Britain, in any part of the world, if a newscaster or anyone talks about the Holocaust, he's fired immediately.
Yes, yes.
So what kind of freedom is there? So we see that these are the actions which we see from them.
That's all right. Even they are joking, for example, in the ceremonies that if you win an Oscar, just do a Holocaust movie.
Yeah.
Okay. That's right. Okay. That's all right. So, but it seems that for so many Muslim lands nowadays, this concept of Muqawama has been forgotten because according to what they say, they claim that we can't say the geopolitical criterions of today's world are different. So you have to cooperate, or it's better to say, interact with the other countries, even the superpowers. What's your answer to that, Sheikh?
You know, of course, it goes to the national interests of different countries and different nations that is defined by their governments. And the governments sometimes define their own national interests in a way that might be opposed to the Islamic beliefs,
values,
to the Islamic principles.
Although they must be Muslim states too, states, okay.
Though they are Muslims.
Yes, yes.
But in a way they practice in their political affair of their lives, it seems that it is not that much, let's say, incompatible with the Islamic teachings and and doctrines. This is the problem. Otherwise, they should not actually cooperate with the arrogant powers, with the oppressors, because, of course, what they want, that is for themselves, not for these nations. And also the historical pieces of evidence show that even those countries that they cooperated or supported or helped this power, they did not gain anything.
Yes.
And finally, all the things went to those countries, went to those superpowers.
Yes.
That is why it is better for all the Muslim nations to gather together and to, let's say, cooperate among themselves.
Yes.
To make a kind of Islamic unity, to reestablish the new Islamic civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the best for Muslims, to have their own civilization.
And do you think they have been successful up to now?
If they finally come to this conclusion that they have to establish this Islamic civilization, they would do that.
Yes.
Yeah, because Islam has this capability to reestablish this kind of new civilization.
That's right.
But the problem is that nowadays, unfortunately, many of the kings, leaders, Salafian of Islamic countries, they are educated in these modern educational systems, in modern universities, in Western universities.
Yes.
So that their mindset and their viewpoints and their worldview is a kind of modern and westernized kind of worldview.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the way that they look at the world, at their own benefits, interests, this is different from what Islam says.
That's all right.
This is the problem that we have nowadays, yes.
So how is it possible to consider America as the big Satan in today's world and not interact with these big power in industry, in economics? You have to be very much rich in terms of your independence, isn't it, Sayyid? Is it possible?
Well, obviously it is possible. Why? Because when we see the dealings that are happening in today's world, especially by the, you know, after the incidents of Ukraine and Russia, what's happening between them,
yes,
we can see a new power or the business, we can say, like, structure has been made in the world. Many countries are thinking to deal in euro rather than in USD.
Mm-hmm.
Dollars, or, you know, the China, Russia, Iran, there is, you can say, a unity between them.
The bilateral trilateral. Yes.
We have other countries who are also coming into this. Muslim countries, they should have one currency in which they should deal, rather than having every country have their own currency.
Yes.
So basically, we can see like these things. Now, for the countries who want to, who do not want US to be, you know, at the front line, obviously they have to change the way of dealing. For example, you should not use the USD dollars in your dealings.
Okay.
The country should get united with each other. The main issue today in the world is that because even in UN, US has the most votes.
Yes.
Or the power. So it vetoes.
Yes.
The things. So when you look at the USA as one party, then you can cope with it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when they come to UN, they divide their states or the countries like that they have. And that's how they got veto in the UN.
Yes.
In the UN.
Okay.
This should not be the case.
We should
take US as one country.
Mm-hmm.
And it should have only one vote in the UN.
That's right. Thank you, my Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi and Sheikh Rouhani, for your presence in the program Viewpoints. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Viewpoints on IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. For more information and to download for free our previous episodes, visit our website, parstoday.com/en Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. Ummati, ummati.
يقولها لنا يوم القيامة أمتي أمتي يقولها شفاعة أنا لها أنا لها
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
With the increase in the prices of gas, electricity, gasoline, and the intensifying inflationary pressure on the consumers, one out of every six American households is unable to pay their electricity bills. Most Americans do not accept President Joe Biden's explanation for the higher prices of gasoline and fuel, and say he has performed poorly in managing the U.S. economy in general. The U.S. President Joe Biden claims that Russia is responsible for the increase in the price of oil and gas, but a new opinion poll shows that only 1 in 10 Americans, or about 11%, agree with this explanation. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some of the U.S. media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The New York Times reports, gas, electricity, and gasoline prices in the United States are creeping higher, reversing a months-long streak of declines and chipping away at a potent talking point for the Joe Biden administration, which had been emphasizing its success at easing pressure on the American public since this summer. Though the uptick has followed a rise in crude oil prices, analysts point out to two new factors that are also pushing gas and gasoline prices higher: a loss of refining capacity in California and Ohio, and rising demand in recent weeks. According to data from the American Automobile Association, the AAA, the national average price of regular gasoline stood at $3.89 a gallon on Friday, 7th of October, climbing for more than 2 weeks. That's lower than the record of about $5.02 a gallon reached in June of this year, but still higher than usual for this time of the year. Prices have made a particularly big leap in California. At about $6.39 a gallon, prices are close to the state's June record of $6.44 a gallon. Gas prices there and in other western states, including in Nevada and Arizona, jumped after several refineries in the region closed for maintenance. The rise, should it last, could increase pressure on the White House to act quickly to bring down prices. A spike in gas prices, which followed a surge in crude oil and other energy costs after Russia's conflict with Ukraine, became both a political liability and a policy headache as consumer prices rose across the board. President Joe Biden, who over the summer responded to the increase in gas prices by chiding energy companies for profiteering on consumers, released oil from strategic reserves and encouraged Saudi Arabia to produce more oil. Gas prices eventually started to decline. The global oil prices tumbled amid rising concern about the slowing of global economy and demand eased. The recent jump means White House officials have been pressed to address the issue once again. Brian Deese, the director of the National Economic Council, said on Thursday, 6th of October, that energy companies need to lower prices at the petrol pump. Analysts say the refinery shutdowns will be temporary, and the fact that Americans tend to drive less in the winter months could keep prices from climbing as sharply as they did back in June. But a recent rebound in crude oil prices, which rose nearly 17% this week as the world's major oil producers agreed to cut production, means predicting what's next will be difficult. The Hill has covered the same story, but from a different angle. According to a Gallup poll released recently, the American public's view of the economy are declining as gas prices are rising. 2/3 of the American public surveyed in the poll conducted recently said that gas prices are causing a moderate or severe financial hardship on their household. That figure marks an increase of 15 percentage points from the 52% who said the same back in April, and is among the highest that Gallup has found when posing the question during periods of gas price increases since 2000. Meanwhile, Gallup's Economic Confidence Index, a summary of Americans' ratings of current economic conditions and outlook for the economy's future, dropped 13 percentage points from last month to minus 58. The index ranges from 100 if all respondents describe the economy positively to minus 100 if all respondents describe the economy negatively. The index's current score is the lowest since February of 2009, when the country was still experiencing the Great Recession. The all-time low was minus 72, recorded back in October of 2008. 8 out of 10 surveyed adults in households earning less than $40,000 a year said gas prices have caused a financial hardship, and 4 out of 10 describe it as severe. Almost 3/4 of respondents from the households earning between $40,000 and $99,999 reported a hardship, and 40% called it severe. Half of respondents from households earning more than $100,000 a year reported a hardship, and 22% called it severe. Aside from the political consequences, a sustained rise in gas prices could affect how businesses and consumers view the US economy. In July, falling gas prices were a key part of the better-than-expected reading of the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, offering a brief glimmer of hope to those looking for signs that inflation has peaked. Russia Today has also covered the same story. According to a Rasmussen poll published recently, just 11% of the American public believe Russian President Vladimir Putin is to blame for record high gas prices in the United States. The majority instead blame President Joe Biden. More than half, or 52% of respondents to the Rasmussen poll conducted recently, pointed to President Biden's poor energy policies as the reason gas prices have become unaffordable, meaning the administration's Putin's price hike narrative does not appear to be catching on. Those who blame neither Joe Biden nor Vladimir Putin point their fingers at oil companies, with 29% of respondents suggesting the industry is leveraging the current geopolitical instability to jack up its prices. Perhaps aware that his Putin's price hike narrative no longer holds water, Joe Biden has been leaning towards blaming oil and gas companies for the ruinous costs of fueling up, recently accusing the industry of making more money than God. President Biden has insisted that oil companies are deliberately holding back from drilling because they make more money not producing more oil. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen recently warned that gas prices may spike again this winter. In an interview with CNN, Janet Yellen said gas prices could rise due to the European Union largely halting Russian oil purchases this winter and banning provision of services that allow Russia to ship oil by tanker. Janet Yellen said it is possible that could cause a spike in oil prices. The price of gas is widely viewed as a critical issue heading into the midterm elections this November. Some 92% of voters saw the rising price of gas, home heating oil, and other fuels as a serious problem in recent opinion poll, with 68% of the American public calling the problem very serious. With no sign of an economic turnaround and elections coming this November, the Democratic Party is likely to be blamed for voters' economic suffering, and both houses of Congress may end up under Republican control.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.